That Esports Podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to That Esports Podcast, the show where we cover anything and everything in the world of esports. I'm Golden Boy, and make sure you give us a like, review, rate, whatever it may be on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, wherever you decide to listen to your audio goodness. Lots to cover here today, so let's just jump right into it. Firstly, I do want to say apologies for not having an episode released last week, and also sorry for this one coming out a little bit later than usual. The reason why for last week was that the Valorant closed beta went live, and I started streaming quite a bit. And I think like balancing the streaming schedule as well as watching and keeping up to date with everything in esports, with also esports being in a weird place right now, a lot of competitions being online. There's just kind of been a weird fluctuating presence in the space because of the COVID-19 coronavirus pandemic. So, you know, I decided that it would be best rather than rush something out that did not have the bar of quality that I wanted. I figured I would just not do it that week, come back stronger next week and see what happens. And come back stronger we did, because this week we have Riot Magus, aka Waylon Rozelle, on the show. And if you guys don't know who that is, you're going to learn very soon, because he's actually the one that helped create the LCS. And in fact, he's the one that is going to be working on creating Valorant's esports program. He's also working on Teamfight Tactics as well, but we focus mostly on Valorant for this particular one. As you guys can imagine, I've been playing Valorant so much. It's such a great game. I genuinely enjoy it. Even if it makes me want to chuck my mouse across the room sometimes, it's still a really, really fun game. So Valorant is going to be the focus again for the interview portion of the podcast. And I know, again, we had a lot of Valorant talk on here, and that's why I also wanted to try and mix things up a little bit and talk about some things that are going on in the world of esports and get your guys' thoughts on it. Always feel free to let me know your thoughts on the show by tweeting at GoldenBoyFTW on Twitter. You can also comment on the YouTube section when I post this on YouTube as well. So that leads me to our first topic of the day, and that is going to be about Fortnite. Now, I know that I haven't talked a lot about Fortnite on the podcast, and that's because there actually hasn't been a lot to talk about. And the reason being is that you had the FNCS, the Fortnite Championship Series, that was revealed right after the Fortnite World Cup. And a lot of people thought that this was going to usher in a new generation for competitive Fortnite. Fortnite World Cup being one of the biggest, grandest events, not only in Fortnite's competitive history, but also esports history. And people thought that the transition from the Fortnite World Cup format to the FNCS was going to create this new kind of star. And I don't think that's necessarily happened, unfortunately. And it's not because Fortnite itself has died, quote unquote, which seems to be a very common thing that you'll read online. That is certainly not the case. In fact, if you actually go to Google Trends and search the search history, YouTube search, Fortnite still dominates. Fortnite is king. It's still the number one game out there. The only other game that I think can match it is League of Legends. And that is just because of the presence that League of Legends has all over the world. So yes, Fortnite has been in a weird spot. And this weekend, as a matter of fact, FNCS is doing their Chapter 2 Season 2 competition that it seems to be pretty good so far. I've been watching it on the Practice Server Twitch channel as well as Baller's channel. They've been covering all the games on there. And that, again, kind of connects to the issue that we're having here, is that while competitive is still a thing and we're still getting these tournaments, we're still getting these events, we're not really getting any official coverage on the Epic side. And so a little, you know, inside scoop on this, I was supposed to commentate the, I think it was the last one before Chapter 2, I was supposed to commentate an FNCS competition that had happened before Chapter 2 had launched, and they decided, Epic Games decided to just pull the plug on it. Obviously not salty about it at all, because it's whatever Epic decides to do, is it's perfectly fine. I'm more concerned about, hey, you know, what's going on as far as coverage is concerned. Everything kind of just transitioned over to more content that was pre-recorded, not really VOD focused, but more clip focused, which I think also makes sense for the audience that consumes Fortnite competitive content. Perhaps they didn't like the streams and they didn't like the fact that they were sitting there watching games when they could just go watch their favorite broadcaster. Let's not forget that Fortnite was the game that really popularized the Twitch Rivals format of jumping into someone's perspective, watching the games from their perspective, you know, things like that. So I guess I kind of understand the mentality that Epic has. Why pay, you know, so much money for production? Why pay so much money for casters when we could simply just have the community do it? The thing is that I don't know, from what I can see, I don't know if the community is being activated nearly as aggressively as they need to be in order to cover something as complex as Fortnite. 100 people playing at the same time, multiple games happening at once. That is very challenging to try and control and to see where you can actually go and check out who's playing what and what they're playing when. It is very difficult to be able to quantify that for community commentators without the appropriate tools. Thankfully, Practice Server and Bala and Monster Deface, like, you know, they love Fortnite so much that they've been on the grind and they've been providing that content and streaming it time and time again. But you always have to ask yourself the question, how long before people like Bala, people like Monster are like, well, maybe our effort is better spent elsewhere because clearly we're not going to get much out of this, you know, to help us out. Still got to put food on the table at the end of the day. There's just a lot of questions that Epic needs to answer, or I would like for them to answer. When I worked with them in the Fortnite World Cup, they were so awesome to work with, treated everyone with respect and kindness. It was a great environment to be a part of, 100%. And it's actually something that, you know, as a commentator, you kind of long for. You want that camaraderie, and we certainly had that when we were working as a whole team for the Fortnite World Cup and the Fortnite Pro-Am. So we'll see what happens and what they opt to do. But I would like to hear an official response from Epic regarding what is going to be the direction of competitive Fortnite. Because not only are you're kind of sort of like shunning off the talent and the community organizers from wanting to be involved in a part of this, but you're also shunning off your players. And as new games come out, namely Valorant, that look very promising with deep ecosystems for competitive, which has not necessarily been revealed, but I think one can imagine that it is going to happen given Riot's history. Fortnite, games like Apex, PUBG, they could be siphoning players left and right because there's just going to be no reason to stick around and compete. You don't just compete for the money, you compete for the joy of competing. It's not a thing that you do because you're trying to get rich. I mean, don't get me wrong, you can win a lot. Like, a lot of the people that played in the Fortnite World Cup were playing to get that $3 million and become rich. Yes, 100%. That was the reason why they were competing. But that is very few and far between. If I'm correct, the prize pool for this one, it's very small for the FNCS in comparison to everything else that has been going on in the world of competitive Fortnite, when every week they were giving away $1 million. Here, it's, I think, a little bit less. I think I saw the prize pool somewhere lingering around like 70,000 or something. Still a lot of money, but not the $3 million and not enough money for someone to invest time into the potential to win that amount of money in a game that is inherently very random and has elements of surprise at every turn. But if you have the opportunity to go compete in Valorant and you have a salary, maybe you're playing in a league, why not? So that is going to be something that I think not only players are going to have to consider, but also Epic will have to consider. And whether or not Epic even cares about that. Not to sound negative on it, but they don't really need to focus on it. They just released the X-Force update, which looks super cool. I had no idea it was even a thing, but they're going to make a ton of money off of that. They made a ton of money off of the Deadpool stuff, the crossovers with Fortnite. As I mentioned before, Google Trends, Fortnite, super high still. Eclipses anything else that's out there on the market. Call of Duty, Valorant, maybe League of Legends. So it just goes to show you that Fortnite is going to continue to make money. Just like the way when people are like, oh, you know, are you worried when they ask me, are you concerned about Counter-Strike losing footing in the space? No, they're not going to lose footing. One, that game has tons of rich legacy. Two, it's Valve. Just like the way here, it's Epic. These are companies that have been able to create solid infrastructure around their products so that if their products end up falling to the wayside, their infrastructure is still going to be very strong and very profitable. But anyway, I digress on the subject. I do wonder what happens next with Fortnite. Let me know. Tweet at me at GoldenBoyFTW. I'd love to hear your thoughts. But let's go ahead and move on to what's been going on in the world of competitive Valorant. So just the other day, T1, you may know them if you are a League of Legends fan. They are the squad that has the very, very famous pro gamer Faker on their roster. Also, the owners of the Philadelphia Fusion. Just good overall people. Had a chance to work with them quite a bit at the Philly homestand. Really, really enjoyed my time with them. And they decided, well, let's go ahead and run a Valorant tournament. They have T1 players already signed, like AZK and Brax. So they figured, let's do this thing and see what happens. The T1 Valorant Invitational took place. There were some notable names in there like Cloaksy. You also had a qualifying team, Spot Up, which was the team that I had a chance to commentate over at the Juked Cash Cup that had happened previously. They were a really good team, and they ended up picking up fourth place in that competition. But the winner and the day went to Brax. And this leads me to wonder where we're going to go as far as Valorant competitions are concerned. Because this weekend, Juked also announced that there is a 128-team open tournament for Valorant that will be taking place on Sunday. How does that work? Do people care about competitive Valorant and open competitions? Do they care about it? I don't know. It's hard to say. People did tune in for the T1 Invitational because some of their favorite content creators were streaming it from their perspective. They also went in for the commentary of Pansy and Puckett, as they should, because they were awesome. And there was just a lot of conversation around just the competition itself, because Team Brax, which had the likes of Hiko and Ska, they were dominating. They were so good. I think they 2-0'd everything leading up all the way to, or they won everything and then 2-0'd in the semifinals. They were on fire. What happens with that team? Is that going to be a real team that we see moving forward? Are we going to get another ride here for folks like Hiko, who have been playing some amazing Valorant as of late? And also, are we going to continue to just see these invitationals because this is what people want? Or are people interested in these open competitions as well? Where does this all go from here? Do the broadcasters that are streaming these games and involved in these competitions necessarily care about wanting to compete in Valorant? And if so, how does that look like? And do they actually commit to it? Is Team Brax, that team that won T1, gonna become a thing? I'm personally excited if that is the case, because that team looks really awesome. Hiko's plays with Breach have been nothing short of impressive. Players are just really understanding how to utilize these agents. And this game is not Counter-Strike. It is, but it also isn't. You have to understand if you are coming into this thinking, oh man, Valorant's just going to be a CS clone. It's totally not. One character, Cypher, can hold down a site by himself, which is something that you really can't do in a game like CS. You can if you have a really good player that's holding angles, but a Cypher could just have cameras placed, have trap wires, have any kind of gadgets that can catch people off guard. Again, just small details really separate Valorant. So I am curious where we end up going with Valorant Esports and how this 128-team competition will shape up. I will be keeping a close eye on it. To my knowledge, I'm not commentating it because a lot of these things have kind of just popped up randomly out of nowhere. But I am not commentating it, but I am looking forward to seeing what talent comes out of this one and whether or not teams like Team Brax, which won T1 Invitational, participate in something like this. Is it worth their time to participate in a competition of this format? Or would they rather just focus on streaming? Next up, the Overwatch League continues their coverage of online matches. The league has gone fully online, and the games have been pretty awesome to watch. I also do have to give a huge shout out to the Overwatch League, because while producing an online event is very challenging, and I've already done a few of them up until this point, of varying degrees of success, I will certainly say that at the very least, the Overwatch League, despite some of the bumps and inconsistent internet connections in the United States, have actually been doing a rock solid job of keeping the coverage going. And I hope that the fans can really appreciate that from them as well. There have been some great matches that took place already this week as we dive into week 11 of the Overwatch League. We're starting to get the Chinese teams participating more now because they're going to have to play catch up on the schedule. The Atlanta Reign took out the Washington Justice, and I was looking forward to this Los Angeles Gladiators and Los Angeles Valiant matchup because the Gladiators have been performing pretty well as of late. They ended up winning that one 3-2. Also, as I previously stated, some of the Asian teams now are getting their opportunities to compete. And another shocking one was that the Chengdu Hunters defeated the Guangzhou Charge 3-0. I did not expect that, given that people have really been playing up how good the Guangzhou Charge are. Whether or not this is going to relate going into week 12, I don't know. And as far as the matches are concerned, we're kind of getting them as they go along because, again, a lot of these players have to catch up. These teams have to catch up. NYXL, for example, isn't even participating in this. They are going to be in the Atlantic Division, and all their players are now back in Korea. So what happens to one of the teams that was potentially the number one team in the league? What happens to them? Also, speaking of top teams, Vancouver Titans have kind of seen a little bit of a fall from grace as they ended up losing to the Guangzhou Charge 3-0 and to the Chengdu Hunters 3-1. The Titans have been struggling. Hasn't been good to see, unfortunately, for the runner-up of the 2019 season.
It's going to be so much of a struggle to find something here. Leave has complete free reign on the high ground now.
Final opportunity now for the Titans. The series on the line. Fissure already down. Amon able to fight him, and they can't get over to the point. That's going to be it. The Hunters take the series 3.
What we're going to end up in week 12 and beyond is anyone's guess. We still have, as of this recording, we still have some matches left to play. The Guangzhou Charge are going to take on the Hangzhou Spark, and then the Chengdu Hunters will compete against the Shanghai Dragons. That will be taking place real early into the AM, 4 a.m. and 6 a.m. of April 19th. So be on the lookout for that if you want to wake up that early and watch some Overwatch. All right, now this leads us to our final bit here, the interview with Riot Magus, one of the minds behind the LCS, the person that's going to be crafting the Valorant esports program, what it means right now, what it could look like in the future. We talk about the observer mode. We talk about just his thoughts regarding Valorant and its watchability. There was a lot of great things discussed. And I do want to give a special shout out to Riot for coordinating this whole thing. I never thought I can get a guest of this caliber on the show, but I'm very happy to be able to do so. I also want to thank Waylon for taking the time to talk to me. Waylon is a father, and in the interview, you're going to hear his kids in the background and stuff, and it was just great. It just goes to show, like, this whole work from home thing, we're all just trying to make it work somehow, some way. So here it is, folks, my interview with Riot Magus, the director of esports at Riot Games and working on Valorant, aka Waylon Rozelle. Enjoy. All right, folks, I'm now joined by Waylon Rozelle from Riot Games. He's the director of esports and is actually going to be focusing quite a bit on this small independent game called Valorant. We are very much excited about it. I've been playing it constantly on my stream. Waylon, how you doing, man?
Doing great, man. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, well, thanks for taking the time. Appreciate it. Everyone's in isolation right now and working from home, so I know that everything must be a little bit, you know, crazy for you, for Riot in general. Launching a game as ambitious as Valorant off of the ground has certainly been an interesting task to take up. How are you guys all handling it over there at Riot?
Well, I would be kidding around if I wouldn't say that the last few days have been, last week and a half really, has been tremendous and humbling, and just to see the amount of interest in the game and Valorant and in every direction, including esports. So we're all been injected with a huge jolt of energy and this heavy mantle of responsibility as we need to, like, take this thing live and really deliver on the promise for what a lot of players have for us. So yeah, doing well otherwise.
Yeah, just, dude, I can imagine.
Can't complain.
I can imagine, man. When this game dropped, it went up to, I believe, 1.7 or something like that million viewers on Twitch within, you know, the blink of an eye. Even smaller streamers like myself, because I'm more known for my esports work, but I stream as more of a hobby, had seen incredible growth on the channel. And then because of that, it has kind of led to more and more people wanting to get involved in Valorant in any way that they possibly can. And that way, obviously, and in relation to this particular podcast, is esports. So esports, mm-hmm. you know, we all live and breathe it. It is what it's in our blood. I understand you were the guy that helped shape the LCS and helped create that incredible program that, you know, I would be very blunt in saying, even though I've worked with all sorts of leagues, is really one of the backbones of esports. And kind of help formulate all this stuff. How has it been transitioning yourself out of the League of Legends side of things and then bringing yourself over to a very different genre and a very different kind of audience?
Yeah, no, you nailed it. I'm sort of an old timer, I guess, like a Riot boomer, if you will. I've been at Riot for almost 8 years now, and the first 7 were dedicated to designing worlds and building the LCS, shipping leagues everywhere, designing like MSI All-Stars, and just really kind of like growing League into the sport that it is today. I just feel super fortunate to get a chance to work on this game and get the chance to just apply all the learnings that we've had from our experience working on League. It's not just myself, but just the entire like global esports team and all of our teams around the world that have worked on running leagues year in and year out. We'll get the chance to really harness a lot of that energy, but then be tasked with solving a completely new puzzle. Right? Like we're new to this genre. We've watched a ton of it from afar, like whether you name it, we've watched it. So the ability to get the chance to work on this thing has been fantastic. But yeah, it has been a huge mindset shift that, and candidly, I stepped away from League in the summer of last year. So it's been a little while, and I focused initially on building a team. I've brought in a few people from other parts of both the industry and in other traditional sports, right? Our lead strategy guys, Kaz Rafruti, he comes from Activision Blizzard. He worked on COD and Overwatch League. We have someone named Alex Francois, who came from the NFL, where he did competitive operations and rules management there. And so we're just trying to build a diverse team with a background in sports and esports, who, you know, the common bond is we're all huge FPS fans, either playing it, watching it, or both. And we're really trying to, you know, do right by Valorant and by this new community, knowing that we can't just run back what we've done in League, but we can certainly build off of what we've learned.
Now, you guys released your competitive guidelines, your community competition guidelines in that blog post, and it created an interesting conversation. Now, having casted so many different games, have seen the pros and cons of each kind of genre. For example, when I worked on like Call of Duty, I saw the limitations, you know, no disrespect to Call of Duty, obviously, but I've seen the limitations of a war simulator game, that what it could have, right? Versus maybe even a game like Halo, which is space combat, you know, futuristic, unrealistic, those kinds of things. So I think you kind of know where I'm going with this. One of the things that was brought up and a few people had mentioned that they were a little bit bothered by was the fact that Riot didn't want to have blood or, you know, I believe it was like the blood option, which you can turn off. And funny enough, I've turned it off in my game because I just feel like it's completely unnecessary. So I just kind of want to give you an opportunity to just, you know, kind of clarify on it, right? Because everyone seems to be thinking that this is some kind of like jurisdiction from on high. But I also think too, like we should factor in that, you know, hey, maybe it's unnecessary to have blood. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that, you know, for context, we've prior to this have met with over 100 esports orgs. We've met with teams, with other tournament organizers, with people in the community. And ultimately, you know, one universal thing that was actually got people excited about Valorant esports, sponsors as well, actually, was this idea of like, oh wow, like we have the option to turn blood off, right? We have characters and a style and an IP that's more approachable. You know, Riot's not the only one that's excited to hop into this genre and this FPS space. Mm-hmm. There are a lot of sponsors who are excited by it. There's potentially, you know, distribution platforms that are excited by it. That I think that historically there have been certain things that have really turned off these folks from jumping in, whether they're fans or sponsors or whatnot. And so it was actually, you know, pretty universal assent that like agreement of like, yeah, like if we can create a viewing experience that is more welcoming and more broadly accepted, it will be better for everybody. Yeah. And so while, you know, everyone's personal game choice is totally their choice, which is why this feature exists, right? I think I saw, you know, a question floating around of like, if we're going to turn it off for esports, why have the feature at all? Well, it's like, look, I mean, everyone's going to play the way they want to play. And that's a personal decision. That's totally fine. But when we have the idea of like presenting this game to the world over media, and we're trying to, you know, get big sponsors to come in and really build an ecosystem that can sustain, you know, cool, like great pro salaries and in the level of investment that we're looking for. This is just one of, you know, many small things that we're looking to bring in to give us a better shot of making that happen. And so this is obviously not a be all end all. There's no silver bullet to this, but this is certainly one thing that we think, hey, if it could help us universally expand the appeal of the game and expand the appeal to sponsors, we think this is a positive thing. And not just for Riot really, but for teams out there looking to pitch sponsors and whatnot too. So yeah. That was the driving force behind it. And there was no real malice. It was just, we think that this is ultimately going to be better and grow the pie in the long term for everybody.
Yeah. I, you know, look, preaching to the choir as far as I'm concerned, because I saw firsthand when I was working at Twitch, the power of a game like Rocket League that was able to bring in sponsors such as Cup Noodles, Old Spice, Mobile One Oil, you know, like the car oil company. Like, there's just so many options out there. And when you introduce blood into this, and I'll be very real, even like the dead bodies too. So I'm with you. I'm with you 100%. And anyone who has a problem with that, take it up with me in the streets. Anyway, moving on though, you guys also release guidelines as far as small tournaments, medium tournaments, major tournaments. Have there been any major tournaments that have, because in the guidelines you specifically called out the likes of ESL, DreamHack, and OGN. We all know that those are some heavy, heavy hitters in the space. Has there been anyone that has been reaching out? You know, could you share maybe some trickles of interest from anyone?
I mean, I don't want to reveal any like particular, you know, orgs that we've talked to. But we have talked to almost everyone in the marketplace, and there's a lot of interest behind it. Yeah. And you know, our strategy here is really to approach Valorant esports as like a community trying to solve a puzzle of like, how do we create an esport that like fits the community that's spinning up around it, that fits the fan, that can do justice to the viewing experience. And we think that by enabling it, look, it's not a wide open approach. Like, we still want to make sure that, you know, tournament organizers aren't at each other's throats, aren't trying to like schedule against each other. So like, as a fan, it's a cohesive experience, and you can see like, okay, cool. You know, like this weekend, I've got a couple things to watch, and it's not like I have to choose between the two of them. But we certainly have the intent of going like, well, if people want to get involved in Valorant, we think that now's a really good time to figure out who is that and how could they potentially get involved into the scene and, you know, bring some innovation and some ideas. And we think that ultimately will help the sport grow in the long run.
Are you really trying to avoid like an ESL Pro League Flashpoint situation where, you know, you have these two that are trying to like vie for control? And is that something you guys are just seeking to actively avoid?
I think that kind of energy, I have respect for both for people and orgs behind both of those efforts, right? We had five tournament organizers wanting to throw a tournament at the same day and the same time, right? And so it's like, what can we do as Riot, as stewards of the sport, to work with each of them to, you know, maybe take a different day so that, you know, a fan who wants to see a lot of Valorant content can, instead of being forced to choose. So like, it's everything from ensuring that there's a cohesive experience for the fan as like the North Star for how we're going to be involved. And then also just making sure that there is a minimum bar of quality and consistency, that if someone's saying, I'm going to like tune in and dedicate my precious time to watching Valorant, I know I'm getting some, you know, baseline threshold experience out of it. And so like that's our intent when we work in collaboration with a TO who wants to throw something for Valorant. It's just like making sure that there are some basic guidelines that they adhere to.
Yeah.
I know I haven't like directly answered your question of like, hey, like this tournament is coming.
No,
but
there is a lot of
interest, and there is our intent to hopefully enable those tournaments happening sooner rather than later. You know, it's one thing to release a letter that states our guidelines at a high level. We have to live that now. Yeah. And, you know, we know that the community is going to hold us responsible for you know, being proactive and making sure that there's a lot of cool events for them to watch. And that's what we intend to do.
Yeah, I'm going to keep it real with you. Yeah, it was my one attempt to try and be a journalist. I'm not a journalist. I'm a, I'm an esports commentator. So that's what I do.
All good, man. All good. So
you answered that one perfectly. Well, I guess in you know, the relationship of being an esports commentator, the observer mode is something that has kind of been an interesting perspective, because a lot of the competitions that I've casted so far, Twitch Rivals, the 100 Thieves Invitational, the Juked Quick Cash Cup, we did them all differently. What, like, I understand right now that it's going to maybe take a little time, but is there some kind of timeline on when we could see not advanced spectator tools, but spectator tools that don't, you know, flip all of the keys at the half of who is on one team versus the other team. Is there any timeline that, you know, people like myself can be very hopeful for? Because that's very critical.
I think the first thing I want to say is, like, we know where we're at, which is we're not in remotely the state where we plan to be for this thing to be like the best viewing experience out there. Like, we're far from that. And I also just want to, like, be very clear at the top that this is a priority, not just for the esports team, but for the development team as well, like Anna and Joe Ziegler and the folks that are working on the game, which is actually one of the things, interesting enough, like we're really trying to take a new approach, at least within Riot, of trying to, like, have the esports team and the development team working super closely together, so that it almost, to the fan, really feels like one holistic experience. I know that's like a little inside baseball that might not matter to everyone, but, like, the hope is that I can then, you know, to the leadership team, when we're talking about, like, hey, what are our priorities? Like, they feel that need as well. And I'm at the table representing esports when we're talking about prioritizing, you know, feature X over feature Y over feature Z. Yeah. And so it is a priority for everyone. Now it's a matter of figuring out, like, what exactly do we need as a, like, long-term North Star to, like, get to, and then how do we set up milestones to, like, iteratively get to that point? So, like, not flipping key bindings at the half is, like, a really good start, you know, like, for maybe, like, a V0.1, right? And so, you know, I think that it's too soon to talk about, like, exact timelines, but what I do want to talk about just is, like, how do we plan on approaching this? Because our hope is to be very open with the community and to ideally involve folks like yourself, other TOs who are throwing tournaments for Valorant, you know, maybe some professional observers in other games who are interested in playing around with Valorant as well, as well as the various teams within Riot who are very, I've got a lot of people who are on the league side going, like, yo, I've been, you know, playing CS or Rainbow Six or insert shooter here for 10 years. Like, let me help you. So our goal is to harness all that energy, brainstorm things that, like, look, if our goal is to be a best in class viewing experience, we have to do a lot more than just look at what's out there and build that. We need to go over the top, and that's going to involve some kind of wacky, crazy brainstorming. But our hope is that this is kind of a more public journey, because this is going to be a set of tools / features that everyone will either use themselves if they're in the community or be watching the result of it. And so I think that if the more that we can kind of make this a collaborative effort with the community, the better we'll have a chance of getting great ideas in and working on stuff that matters. That's like, it's for what it's worth, if you ask me, like, what are the concerns that I have as, like, an esports person around Valorant, other than just now living up to the hype and the anticipation, it is, we've inherited this awesome game that I think is super deep, but it's going to be really hard to watch. And I think that it's like, we're going to need to create the feature set that will enable us to showcase some of the strategy that, like, you might not be able to see, that you might have to, like, rewind and, like, go, like, oh, look, they timed this, like, Phoenix ult with a Sova arrow and like a teleporter to do this, like, cool combo, like in the devs versus the loaded guy show match. Like, how do we capture that? Maybe not in real time, but in close enough time that maybe we can, like, talk about that during a buy round, right? After the round ends.
For sure.
And so, like, we need to figure out how to, like, make that happen. And not just for internal Riot people, but for anyone who wants to throw a tournament, ideally. That's going to be an ongoing effort, man. Like, and that's, I won't kid you. Like, you're going to see many, many iterations of the feature set that's available to spectate and to observe. We're starting at the ground floor right now, but hopefully, you know, the game's not launched yet is kind of at least something we can lean on right now. Like, hey, we're still in closed beta.
Yeah.
But I do think that for the people who are interested, know that it is a priority for sure. Just like, we're going to have to solve this thing. If our aspirations are to make this thing a huge global sport, like, it's got to look good and it's got to be fun to watch. And we got to give the tools to make people do creative stuff.
I do have to be just honest and be like, hey, it's a week and a half into the closed beta.
I
just think that is what is so interesting about esports. And, you know, esports moves so fast. Like, Valorant comes out April 7th, first day Twitch Rivals happens, everyone looks at it and they're like, we could do that. Then me and Riv hop on and we cast the loaded talent versus the devs match, and then everyone looks at that and says, maybe we can make it happen. And then boom, like 10 tournaments announced, like, all around the same time, all with different kinds of expectations. And it's wild. It's wild how in the span of 10 days, I've casted so much Valorant, and I don't even know how that happened. So another thing that I do want to bring up here is also regarding talent, because I am a caster, and, you know, this is important to me. What is the vision as far as what you guys are looking for regarding talent? Because, you know, LCS and League of Legends in general kind of set a really high bar for what it is to be a talent in esports, as far as, you know, consistent pay, working for a company, versus like Counter-Strike, which is more of an area where I'm more familiar with as a freelancer. You know, I didn't work the Overwatch League officially, as I only did, you know, that first season as like I came in as a guest host, you know, and gave Puckett a week off. What is the intention as far as you guys are concerned regarding talent? I know that this is like a little far out of a thing to talk about, but it has been something that's been interesting to me, because, you know, I have a very comfy life here in New York and I have no intentions of changing that anytime soon. But I also know you guys are out in LA, and like, everything's out in LA. So what do you guys see as a vision for talent in-house, more freelancers? Where would you like to go with that?
So it's certainly going to evolve. I mean, we've even evolved. It's worth noting. We've even evolved our own sort of view on quote unquote in-house talent, right? Because if you look at an LCS or an LEC broadcast now, it's actually a mix of, you know, official, like, formal Riot employees and people who might've previously been employees who are now freelancers, but have like a contract with whether it's the LCS or the LEC, depending on who you're talking about. And so I don't think it's no longer a like, okay, well, if you're not a Riot employee, you can't cast our game. And also, I think if you look at where we think the landscape's going to go initially, right? Like, we've been very open with this. This is not going to be a closed ecosystem from the jump. It's going to be, you know, there's going to be third party TOs and people throwing tournaments. And so I think naturally you'll see probably a bent towards freelancers having the opportunity to engage in this. I also think there will be Riot employees who can and will cast this thing, right? Like, I think that when it comes down to it, for example, right, if Rivington weren't involved, he'd probably kill me, right? Riv has made his intention real clear that, you know, he's like, I'm casting this thing. I'm like, oh yeah, man, like he's
amazing at it. I've had the pleasure of working with him a few times now.
Oh, I wish Rivington cast my life, right? Like, that, he's one of those guys that I just wish he just, like, it's the soundtrack for my voice, for my life was his voice. So look, you'll probably see a mix, as we have both a mix of Riot events will probably be, again, just be a mix of a freelance plus Riot casters, just kind of, if you look at also what we've done for TFT, right? It was sort of a mix, but then I think it'll be weighted more towards freelance, just because you'll have a lot of third party TOs doing some stuff. And that tends to, from my observation, tends to be more on the freelance side of things. So that'll be the initial mix, but like, there is no, right? Like, there is no, I candidly, there's just no plan for, okay, we want like this person and that person, and we don't want that person or that person, right? Like, I think we tried to speak to this in the letter, which is like, look, we want the voices to emerge based on like passion and talent and dedication and by community demand in some ways, right? So we think that was actually one real positive thing about League, was you had some people who casted some other stuff prior, but like also grew up in the League in the league ecosystem. And so hopefully by having something a little bit more open, it'll give more access to aspiring casters who really want to dedicate themselves to Valorant that we might discover that we've never seen before. It'd be like, oh, wow, this person's fantastic. Maybe they'll, you know, want to cast for an event, you know, down the road for Riot. And, you know, maybe that'll end up working out. And so
yeah.
The hope is that there is a more of a path for an aspiring caster in Valorant than there might be for like one of the more, you know, sort of evolved ecosystems like an Overwatch or like a, you know, like a League of Legends.
Yeah, no, for sure. I appreciate that. And finally, last question before we wrap things up here, because I know you have a lot to do, you know, family man. You know, I know that the announcement was very much, hey, we're going to do this thing. It's going to be open. We want to get third parties involved. But we can't beat around the bush here. The LCS exists. It set the bar for what a closed league could look like, especially with the franchising when you guys introduced that. Do you see that happening with Valorant down the line? Do you think that there's a timetable that involves a year, 2 years from now? Is that even being talked about, the possibility of doing a closed pro league style type of program, you know, around the world, like you have with LCK, LPL, LEC, so on and so forth?
Yes, dude, that's a great question. Look, I'd be lying if I didn't say that we haven't been asked by like some teams going, hey, are you starting this thing up? Can we be a part of it? Because I think it's been a system that's really benefited a lot of folks, not just, you know, Riot or fans really, but you know, benefit a lot of people,
yeah.
Like teams and players and stuff. There is no timeline, right? Like we know that at least if the closest thing to the timeline is we know that the first 6, 12, 18 months, whatnot, will be focused on trying to create a lot of tournaments, create a lot of high stakes matches. Because ultimately, I think one of the benefits of a tournament driven ecosystem is that you have like more distilled, meaningful matches, right? And while leagues are great, you know, they're hard to set up and B, they're hard to walk back. And so we think that like, you can always evolve out of a tournament structure, excuse me, but mm-hmm. It's really hard to set up a league structure and then like pull it back and go, hey, actually, you know what? We got that wrong. We think the right system for Valorant is a series of tournaments. That actually is really hard to pull back. So we think that from a like game and sport growth perspective, you should expect to see lots of events and lots of tournaments. How those will look like are TBD. We're talking, we're throwing everything at the wall and seeing what sticks. We expect there to be a lot of innovation from community TOs. We think that's a good thing. And we're just really open to learning. Cause like, again, like we have to learn what does the Valorant player look like? What does the Valorant esports fan, you know, look like? What do they want out of their engagement with esports? Because so much of this getting it right really means being fan focused, right? Like so much of it is like, we're putting on a sports league or a sport is nothing but trying to service the fan and make sure that they love watching so they come back, you know, week in and week out, month in, month out. So we have so much to learn in these early days that like that's really going to be our focal point early on, is like learning what the fan wants and as well like nailing the viewing experience. Because again, I can't possibly emphasize this enough. Like this has to be a focal point of ours, because whatever structure we have won't matter if it's not a minute-to-minute fantastic show,
yeah. Right?
And so like we have to crush that. And so that's going to be a big focal point of our team.
Well, Waylon, thank you so much, man. I'm looking forward to not only enjoying this as a fan, but hopefully being able to be a part of some of those events down the line, because casting this game has genuinely been like the most fun I've had in a very long time. So thank you so much for your time. Best of luck to you, to Riot, to everyone on Valorant. Congratulations on Valorant. And I'm just looking forward to seeing what more kick-ass things y'all do down the line. So thank you so much, man.
Thank you so much for having me on.
All right, folks, that's going to do it for this episode of That Esports Podcast. And a huge shout out to Riot Magus for being a part of it, answering my questions. I tried my best to be a little bit of a journalist. It didn't really work out, but I tried, you know, so no one can say I didn't try. Even then, though, I'm excited for what we're going to be seeing with Valorant. I know that there's a lot of question marks out there right now, but the interest that we're seeing from people around the community, around the industry, has been awesome to witness. It's almost as if everyone's rejuvenated with a new spirit, and that's something that only a new game can really provide. And I think that the format and the direction that Riot is going in is actually going to be really good in the long run. Because as you can imagine, when you launch out with a league, it's challenging to be able to scale in different directions versus doing that with a tournament structure. You can go in many different directions. And I think that's the part that makes me so excited for competitive Valorant and its future. So, once again, thank you to Riot Magus, Waylon Rozell, for joining me on this show. And thank you for listening this far into the show as well. If you happen to enjoy it, give me a like on Spotify, follow there as well. You can also rate and review on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or wherever you choose to listen to your audio goodness. If you happen to be watching this on YouTube, subscribe, like as well. Let me know what content you want to see on the channel as I'm trying to figure out the content flow as well. Follow me on Twitch and check us out there because I go live every day, 9 p.m. Eastern time till whenever. Just playing Valorant, chatting with people, and it's always a good time. Thank you so much for listening to That Esports Podcast. I truly appreciate it, and I'll catch you in the next one. Peace.